This guy, Martin, his parents do dumplings. I hear they are delicious. And what about Martin? I sighed, picking up another votive. Very nice, super cute, and totally hung up on his ex. He made a face. Yikes. Yeah, her name is Eloise. To me, she kind of sounds like a nightmare, but he is hopeful it's just a matter of time before she comes to her senses. I tucked a piece of hair behind my ear. It wasn't awful, though. At least I got to see Jilly.
She's been busy?
She's always busy, but now she's in love, which means any of her spare time is all about Michael Salem, I said.
That always sucks, when your friends go totally MIA.
Nah, I'm happy for her. She deserves it. I bent down, arranging the candles in the box at my feet. Jilly has always been a hopeless romantic, but she's never really had a serious boyfriend. It's a first for her, all this walking into the sunset, so it's huge. I could feel him looking at me as I stood back up, bunching up some more paper.
What about you, though?
I just told you, alien guy on Monday, Martin last night, and Ben and I are trying to work out something this weekend, since I'll be free. So not only am I totally still in this, I'm actually ahead of what we agreed on, which is why I'm already thinking about good prospects for you when you can't go the distance with Lauren. Maybe Eloise will still be available.
Maybe,
he said, and I laughed. But I wasn't talking about the bet. I looked at him. Oh, then what did you mean?
The whole in love, hopeless romantic, huge thing. When do you get that?
Have to win the bet first, I said, and laughed again. He didn't.
I'm serious, Luna. The bet aside, you want that, right? The sunset walk?
Immediately, I felt myself tense, my guard going up. I mean, sure, I said, trying to sound light, easy. Who doesn't? But it only happens so often.
You think there's a limit on sunset walks?
I think, I said, that we're all entitled to great loves, but not an endless amount. If you've had one, it takes a while for another to come around.
A great love is just that, though. Great.
Yeah? I asked.
So it doesn't usually involve a bad breakup like yours did, which is the opposite of great.
Now I was kind of stuck. I cleared my throat, recalibrating. Things end, I told him, even with the best or greatest of beginnings. And yellow and blue make green. Such is life, right? I wrapped another large pillar in tissue, then put it in the box. After a few moments of silence, Ambrose said,
I can't decide if you're really this cynical or just guarded.
Maybe both, I said. I was trying to be funny or at least lighten the mood. It was bad enough to be surrounded by the evidence of a romance that had crashed and burned. Did we really have to share our own war stories as well? The moment I thought this, though, I felt a pang in my heart. Ethan wasn't a battle for me. Loving him had been the easiest thing I'd ever done. Maybe that was why I was so sure if anything else ever came even close, it would be nothing but hard. Just then the door opened, the beep sounding overhead. I looked over to see Lauren coming in, wearing flip-flops and a sundress, another girl following along behind her.
Hope it's okay we dropped in, she said to Ambrose, waving at me. I waved back. I just really wanted Maya to meet you.
It's fine, Ambrose said, putting down the guest book he'd been about to pack up and walking over to them. The famous Maya. It's great to finally make your acquaintance. And you are the infamous Ambrose.
The girl, who was taller than Lauren, with dark hair and a nose ring and wearing jeans and a tank top, replied,
who has my cousin in the best mood I've seen her in for months.
At this, Lauren blushed, but still reached out to take Ambrose's hand, wrapping her fingers around it.
Maya got the brunt of my breakup darkness, she explained to us.
I went a bit goth for a while there.
If you can even imagine that, Maya said.
I can't.
Lauren is all sunshine, Ambrose replied, and of course at this she beamed, glittering even more. I went back to my candles.
So, big days tomorrow, huh?
Yep, Maya said, glancing at the cake topper. And I hear you can actually attend?
I can,
he replied, and Lauren smiled even wider.
We had a last-minute cancellation, hence all this stuff and no use for it.
Maya picked up a bottle of bubbles tied with a ribbon from a nearby basket.
Wow, looks like it was going to be a big deal. All weddings seem big once you work a job like this, he replied. No matter the size, it's the small details that kill you.
He sounded just like my mother. I bit back a smile, bending over my box.
Well, I guess it's good we decided to forego all that for the most part, then,
Maya replied. Maya's getting married tomorrow, Lauren explained to me.
You are? Congratulations, I said. Where's the ceremony?
She and Lauren looked at each other, then laughed.
Good question.
Right now, it looks like it might be at that Jump Java a few doors down, in that little patio part out back, unless we can find someplace better. I raised my eyebrows.
The patio? Aren't there just smoking tables out there?
We're hoping to relocate the ashtrays, Lauren said easily, as Maya moved her hand over the votives left on the table.
Maya and Roger want it low-key, and Leo's boss okayed it, as long as we don't linger during the evening rush.
It's all about the party after, anyway.
And where's that? I asked.
Probably we'll all just go up to the incubator for drinks, Maya said. That's our favorite bar. We actually met there.
I looked at Ambrose, who had gone back to piling blue and yellow-edged napkins into the box.
Wow, after all we see around here, it sounds so easy.
This word just came to me, and I was grateful for it. Better than the next one, which was sad. But maybe the whole Margot thing was getting to me.
Maya said,
Well, Roger just hated the idea of a big, expensive thing, you know? And we're doing a party in a couple of months in Michigan for his whole family, so none of them are coming. It's just us and my mom, the friend who got ordained on the internet to marry us, and a few others.
It's going to be perfect, Lauren said.
Oh, totally, Maya added. To me, she said, What are these?
I glanced over to see her holding a box of small cards tied with a bow.
Oh, those are for the wish wall, or were.
Wish wall? She said. What's that?
I looked at Ambrose, wanting to offer him the chance to explain, but he looked clueless,
so much for already being an expert.
At the ceremony, we were going to set up this bulletin board on an easel, I told her, pointing to where it was leaning against a nearby chair. Then, during the reception, everyone writes out a wish for the bride and groom on one of these cards and tacks it up. At the end of the night, we take them down and arrange them back in the box. The idea is that every night from the first one you are married, you open one together.
Oh, she looked at the box. That's kind of cute.
It's big right now, I told her.
Luna, however, doesn't believe in wishes, Ambrose added.
I don't believe in making one every time you blow out a candle, I corrected him. But this is kind of nice for the couple. People seem to like it.
Maya put the box down, then picked up the cake topper again.
I can see the appeal. I mean, Roger didn't want to do any of this, but...
I looked at Ambrose, who raised his eyebrows. Lauren said,
But you didn't either, right? I mean, you're good with the simple plan?
Oh, sure, Maya replied quickly.
I mean, it's just about us being together with the people we love. It doesn't matter where we are, and that patio seems nice.
You said we could put some flowers out and then bring them up to the incubator and put them on the picnic tables outside there.
That sounds good.
It'll be great, Lauren said.
Perfect, Ambrose added.
Maya just stood there, holding the cake topper.
Are you okay?
I'm fine, just fine. Her voice cracked clearly on this last word. She looked at me. Do you have a restroom I can use?
Down the hall to the right, I told her, pointing. She nodded, releasing the topper, and then went that way. A moment later, we heard the door shut, then lock, behind her. Lauren looked at Ambrose.
Oh, my God, I had no idea she wanted any of this. I would have helped her.
She didn't tell you she did.
He put an arm around her, and as I watched how effortlessly, easily she leaned into him, I thought of myself doing the same thing, then, quickly, of something, anything else. Ambrose said to her,
"Weddings are emotional, even the small ones. I'm sure that's all this is about."
I mean, I asked her if she was sure about the patio, if she didn't want to do it somewhere nicer, but they're both students and don't have much to spare. Leo offering Jump Java seemed like the perfect solution, and the incubator, well...
It's a very thematic name, Ambrose assured her. First comes love, then comes marriage, then comes Maya.
With a baby in an incubator? She looked stricken. Now I want to cry.
What's wrong with incubators? They save lives.
Ambrose, I said quietly. I should go check on her, Lauren said. She seemed really upset. Here, take a water. I reached over to grab one off a nearby table. It always helps. She did, then started down the hallway, her flip-flops thwacking against the carpet. When she was gone, he looked at me.
Okay, he said. You have to do something.
Me? I asked.
A bride is in distress. That's your specialty.
A bride, I corrected him. Not our bride. She said herself all this, I gestured at the stuff still piled around us, wasn't what she wanted.
Come on. I've only worked here a few weeks, and even I can recognize a CG when I see one.
I blinked, surprised he'd learned this abbreviation. A controlling groom is only our problem if it's our event, and this isn't. He looked at the tables again, then at me.
Okay, but what if it was?
But it's not.
But it could be, he said. If we decided to help, maybe find a better place, donate some of this stuff, it could totally be.
You want to get my mother involved in this? I asked. Are you insane?
No, I'm not talking about her. I mean us.
He moved his hand, fingers wiggling, back and forth between us. It reminded me, instantly, of that first night we'd met at his mother's wedding, when he wanted me to heal. It seemed like ages ago now.
You and me, we could do this.
But I don't want to, I said.
Did you not just see that?
He demanded, pointing at the bathroom door. Lauren must have joined her cousin inside, as I couldn't see anyone.
This is the only wedding that girl will ever have. Do you want to be responsible for it taking place among ashtrays and the sound of coffee grinding?
Or, I said, lowering my voice to a whisper, it is a first marriage, soon regretted, and she does everything exactly to her heart's desire the next time.
He just looked at me. I can't believe you just said that. And, by the way, whispering didn't make it any less heartless.
I sighed. Ambrose, I know you like to save things, dogs, children, the day, but not everybody wants it or needs it.
But some people do, he shot back. In those cases, if you can help, you should. Why wouldn't you?
Because it's not your problem? Or responsibility?
I don't see it that way.
Then you plan the wedding, I told him. You know enough by now. Take this stuff and go nuts if that's what you want. It's fine with me. Hearing this, he studied my face, saying nothing for long enough that I started to get self-conscious.
It must have really been awful, he said. What happened to you?
I swallowed. I don't know what you're talking about.
You do, though. A boy, a great love lost, the only sunset walk you're allowed?
He shook his head.
You can't even see the hope in anything.
I see plenty of hope, I retorted, feeling defensive. But this is a business,
which is built on the whole idea of people wanting to mark publicly the very moment they agree to be together forever, once and for all.
And it's lovely when it works out that way, I said, once and for all and all. But sometimes it doesn't. I'm part of this kind of thing enough. I don't need to do it on my free time as well. Don't you get that?
He didn't answer this question. In fact, he said nothing, and then distantly, I heard the bathroom door open. By the time the girls returned, I was back at work wrapping a candle like it was my job, which, in fact, it was.
Sorry about that, Maya said to us. Pre-wedding jitters, I guess.
We're going to do a wish wall, Lauren told Ambrose. It won't be hard to pull together, right?
You can use this one, he said, nodding at the box of cards on the table. Luna said so.
At this, both Lauren and Maya turned to me. Oh, wow, really? Maya asked, her face flushed. That's so nice. Thank you.
I nodded, this time staying silent myself. And I was thinking, Ambrose said, that while the patio idea is nice, I think you can do better. Why don't you guys come back to my house and take a look at the backyard? Bee's garden is awesome, and we have plenty of space for tables.
The girls looked at each other. Maya said, Really?
Why not? At least there won't be ashtrays.
Or incubators, Lauren said. Oh, and we could put flowers in mason jars. Those are cheap, right?
I think so, Maya replied. And you know what else isn't expensive? Those little white lights, like Christmas ones that we could string up. I wonder if they sell them in summer.
Even if they don't, Ambrose said, someone has to have some in their attic. We'll ask around.
Oh, I love this, Maya said, clapping her hands, a smile on her face. I mean, I know we wanted to keep things simple, but
this will be simply beautiful, Lauren finished for her.
Maya looked like she might tear up again, or already was.
Thank you, she said to Ambrose, clearly meaning it. Then she looked at me. Seriously.
Oh, I said, holding up a hand. This is all him.
And it was. I was acutely aware of this for the next 45 minutes as I finished the workday with them so close by, excitedly planning away. I focused on my packing, getting the tissue wrapped just right, clearly labeling each bin with its contents. Everything in its place, just as it should be, even as this crazy last-minute event came together only steps away. But as they left at 5, still chattering excitedly, and I locked up alone, I couldn't help feeling like I'd lost. What, though, at least this time? I couldn't say.
Chapter 21. What do you say when there's nothing left to tell? Just the final details, the flimsy bits, or maybe not so flimsy at all, that round out the end of the story. This is the part no one ever wants to share, but here it is anyway. I ditched school after first period the day of the shooting. I just couldn't stay there, looking at my phone screen, empty of messages and calls from Ethan. The guard wasn't at the school parking lot gatehouse when I left, but if he had been, I don't even know what I would have said, what magic words I could have summoned to win my release. I was speechless, silent, and all I could do was cry. And I didn't even know anything for sure yet.
That would come later. Hours after I showed up tear-stained and shaky at the office, giving William what he would later call, when he told his part of this story, the scare of his life. He was not a news person, and my mother never paid attention to anything on TV or radio other than Daybreak USA, which she'd cut off early that morning. So they'd had no idea what was going on, instead immersed in the details of their bucking Bronco wedding.
We'd had to go next door to the stationery store, where they had a TV in the back, all of us crammed into their tiny office watching live coverage.
I remember my mother kept looking at me, her face more worried than I had ever seen it, while William held my hand, his other arm over my shoulder. So close, and yet nothing and no one could get to me. I tried calling Ethan every few minutes and checked his YouMe.com page, where other people were also begging him to update. He'd last logged in the night before, posting a picture of his cleats after a particularly muddy practice. I'd look at them a million times. Later, at home, after a pizza arrived that no one ate, my mom and William kept leaving the room for huddled conversations of which I caught only a word here and there. Contact. Question. Interfering. Necessary. They asked if I had a number for Ethan's parents, an address, anything. I didn't. But even if I had, I wasn't sure I could have called at that point. Ethan would never have made me worry. He would have gotten in touch, somehow, as soon as possible. So I knew by then. But I didn't want to know. It sounds so weird now. All of this, in retrospect, seems tear-streaked and damp. How I could sit so silently in front of a TV for hour upon hour, fingers gripping my own fingers, until that moment early the next morning when the names of the victims were released. There were four before him, and, I knew by the math, two after. I didn't hear those, though. When I saw his name on the screen, everything went black. It would be days later that I'd finally pieced together the whole story, partly from a friend of the family who answered the phone at the Carusos when William finally got through and explained who he was, some from the news stories that put together timelines, marking the exact spot in the gym where Ethan had come running after hearing the shots that killed two female volleyball players. He'd tried to talk the guy into putting down the gun, witnesses who looked to be in shock themselves told Patrick Williams, who went to Brownwood to report live on location. I'd sat with my mother, watching Daybreak USA so many mornings, and now, suddenly, they were talking about someone I knew, someone I loved. The picture of Ethan all the news outlets showed, provided by the family, was one I hadn't seen, a candid from junior prom the year before. Every time it went up on screen, I wanted to believe, somehow, it wasn't him after all. Like if I didn't know that Ethan, it couldn't be mine who was gone. I watched everything I could, even after the major networks moved on. Nothing about the shooter, though. His name and details were of no interest to me, not deserving of a single breath I was still struggling to take. But the special reports on the victims, details true or not, Ethan Caruso loved soccer, lacrosse, and his friends say, Lexi Navigator. I soaked in like water. And when they weren't on, and I was alone, I ran over our own story, that one night again and again in my mind. Every bit, from the minute I stepped into the damp sand until he drove away, a flash of red through those whirling, revolving doors. Like if I repeated it enough, I could conjure him up, bring him back, and this would all be the bad dream I wished it was. I wanted to go to the service. When it was announced on the memorial page his friends had put up, I immediately made plans to make the trip, William and my mother offering to come with me. The night before we were to leave for the airport, though, I started throwing up, the sickest I had ever been. It was like my grief was toxic, turning my very body against me. After I passed out walking from the bathroom back to my bed, my mom put her foot down and told me I had to stay home.
I didn't speak to her for 3 days. They had a group memorial that was televised, a healing event for the community. Students held candles, teachers linked arms, everyone cried. The lacrosse coach, between his own sobs, talked about how, on that morning, he'd asked Ethan to his gym office to tell him about some interest from a college recruiter. When Lexi Navigator, in a plain black dress and minimal glitter, was introduced to sing her song about loss, a favorite of one of the victims, I held my pillow to my mouth and screamed. There were more details, like how I missed a full week of school, staying in my bed and sobbing. The way Jilly came by every afternoon and crawled in beside me, her arms around my waist, holding me as I tried to sleep. The brightness of the sky outside, the filtered sunlight through the tree just past my window, the most beautiful fall, everyone agreed. It probably was. But even though I was there and lived it, I couldn't have said so. The dead aren't the only ones who vanish. You, too, can disappear in plain sight if enough is taken from you. I was still missing, in many ways, and I wasn't sure I wanted to be found. Chapter 22.
I know you want no part of this, but I need a punch bowl.
This was the third text I had gotten from Ambrose, and it was only 9 a.m. So much for my bonus, unexpected, non-working Saturday. I picked up my coffee, taking a sip, and reminded myself that Jilly and I had an entire day planned at the pool together. It wouldn't be relaxing, nothing was, with Crawford, Kit Kat, and Bean in tow, as they would be, but at least I'd be off the clock, if I turned off my phone. "Nobody likes punch," I texted back. "Do pictures of something instead, less messy slash germy." In response, he sent me a thumbs up, the same response I'd gotten when called earlier to advise on one of those plastic aisles you roll out for everyone to proceed down. They never stay put and look awful. And the merits of mushroom appetizers versus meatballs. As one of our favorite caterers, Delia, always said, "Vegetarians aside, everyone loves meatballs." It was clear that in the last 14 hours or so, this impromptu, easy backyard wedding had morphed into something more complicated. And who needed that? Not me, I thought as I found my bathing suit and pulled it on, then tied my hair up in a ponytail. I was searching the hall closet for some sunscreen when my phone rang. I sighed, not in the mood for more questions, but then I saw it was my mother. "Hey," I answered. "How's life in the tropics?" "Wonderful," she replied. I blinked, surprised, then looked at the screen again, confirming it was, in fact, her I was talking to. "It's just so relaxing and gorgeous. I should have done this years ago." This time, I looked at the clock. With the time difference, it was just after 10, which meant either she was still loopy from a late night before, or she was already hitting the mimosas. "When in Rome," I thought. "Wow," I said. "I have to say I'm surprised with how much you resisted." "Oh, that," she said, batting away days of complaints and stress as easily as a circling gnat. "Classic workaholic behavior. I'm textbook, according to John." Okay, she was clearly drunk. "Do you mean workaholic? And who's John?" "Oh, sorry." She laughed, and the sound surprisingly tinkly, which was a word I had never associated with my mother, well, ever. "John Sheldon. He's a former CEO and author we met on the plane, wrote an entire book about the overworked business, corporate, obnoxious mentality all too prevalent these days. Workholes, like assholes, but worse." "Right," I said. "So you know this guy now?" Another light laugh. Well, we ended up chatting the entire flight, and then he invited us to dinner at his place. He keeps a second home here to recharge and get away from the nothing Olympics.
What?
It's another one of his terms in his book. The competition we're all in daily, so fiercely, to climb ahead of each other. And what's the final prize? Nothing. Now I was getting concerned. Is William around? Sure, he's right here. Hold on. Something rubbing the phone, followed by a muffled voice, sounded in my ear. Then William came on, sounding perfectly normal. Thank goodness. Hey, Lou, everything okay back home? Yeah, I said slowly. How's it going there?
Oh, great, he replied. I mean, everyone thinks I'm a concierge, but at least the tips are good.
They both laughed at this. Normally, I would have too, but I was distracted. Mom sounds kind of crazy.
He laughed. I know, right? She's a smitten kitten. You should see her when she's actually with this guy.
It's like the cartoons, hearts in her eyes. Are you serious?
Totally.
I heard my mother say something, to which she replied, Oh, please, it's totally true, and you know it. If I didn't love you so much, I'd be jealous to the point of depression. Also, all the drinks are included.
More laughter.
Meanwhile, I still couldn't find the sunscreen. Hold on, I said to William. Mom actually likes this guy?
I know, it's insane. They only just met, but he's taking her out on his boat today for lunch.
But she hates the water.
Apparently it's different here, or she is.
He snorted. Anyway, don't worry. We spent half of last night researching him on the internet, and he's legit. Not my type, of course, but we can't all get so lucky in first class.
We're just friends.
I heard my mom call out, which was reassuring, until she added, For now, anyway. My phone beeped again. It was Jilly. I need to go, I said. Call me later?
Will do,
William said cheerfully.
Miss you.
Love you, my mom chimed in. Everyone is insane, I thought as I clicked over to Jilly. Hey, I said, are we still on for 10? She sighed, answering this question. I'm so sorry. Kitty has an earache, and I have to take her to urgent care. Even if it's not an infection, and it totally is, she can't swim. Oh, I said. Well, I can come along, help with the kids. That's so nice of you, she replied, as some kind of shrieking, in Baker family style, of indeterminate source erupted behind her. But to be honest, Michael Salem already offered to take them to the park with his little brothers for me. We're all going for lunch at the truck later. You could meet us there if you want. Oh, that's okay. I'll just hang out here, I guess. I'm sorry, she said again. But what are you doing tonight? Did you finally make plans with Ben?
We're supposed to talk this afternoon when he's off work.
Ever since the previous weekend and his invite to World of Waffles, we've been trying to make something else happen. But Thursday, the guy who worked at Jumbo Smoothie the shift after him didn't show up and he had to close. Then the night before, when he was free after 9, I'd just come from dinner over at the baker's where they were testing out a new sandwich, the good goodly goo, and was too stuffed to do anything. We would work it out, though, if only because I had a bet to win. Well, let me know if you guys end up going out, she said. I'll be kid-free by 7 if all goes as it should. And you know how often that happens. I did. But I told her I'd see her later anyway, then hung up, sitting back against the wall. It was now mid-morning, and the whole day stretched out in front of me. I was sure I'd spend it answering wedding questions for Ambrose and expected more texts as I changed, then went downstairs and made breakfast. But my phone stayed silent. In my heart, I'd been alone for a long while, but this was the first time in ages that I'd felt like it. This is good, I told myself,
climbing the stairs back to my room with a big cup of coffee in hand. I had a closet to clean out before I left for school, a task I'd been putting off for ages. I grabbed a garbage bag for thrift shop donations and another for trash, then pulled open the door and got to work. An hour later, I was sweaty and sneezing from dust, and both bags were full. There was a third pile as well, marked Jilly, of the clothes of hers she'd abandoned among my own. All that was still left to deal with was the one outfit off to the side. I'd brought that black dress to Colby that August weekend in a garment bag, the shoes still new in their box. Coming home that Sunday morning, sleepless and giddy, I'd tossed them both into a plastic hotel laundry bag, which, when I dumped it out later, also poured forth a fair amount of sand. I got the dress dry cleaned, something I'd later regret so much. Even so, more than once, I'd pressed my face to it, wishing to find just the slightest bit of Ethan's smell, the ocean, and that night still on it somewhere. Otherwise, I just left it, hanging on its single hook, the shoes lined up beneath it, like the shroud for the body of the girl I once was and would never be again. Now it had been almost 9 months. Maybe it was time. I pushed my hair off my damp forehead, then picked up Jilly's pile, turning to toss it outside the door before I walked over to the dress. I reached out, touching the bodice, then felt the tiny row of sequins almost invisible along the hem. In my mind, time blurred, moving sideways. Ethan sliding a strap off my shoulder, the skirt blowing across my bare legs, down at the end of the world. I bit my lip, imagining myself sliding it from the hanger, folding it carefully, and putting it in the donate bag. It wouldn't carry my memory. That would always stay with me. I knew that now. And yet, I remained unable to take those few steps to do this last task. Yet. My phone beeped from where it was on my bed. I ran out and grabbed it so quickly I would have been embarrassed had anyone been watching, which, of course, no one was. Kind of a table emergency. Suggestions? We have a few, I typed back. How many you need?
As many as you got. I'll have someone pick them up.
I looked back into the closet at the dress, those shoes, and wished yet another time I could slide back into them, like Cinderella under the fairy godmother's spell, take a spin and begin all over. But it was just an outfit, and Ethan was gone. Things would change, but never that. No matter how many times I told anyone, it would always be the end of this story. But maybe not, I was beginning to see, of mine. No, I'll bring them, I wrote Ambrose back. Just tell me where. Bee's house was a pretty bungalow at the end of a cul-de-sac with sunflowers blooming up the front walk. Much better than a smoking patio. As I climbed out of my car and started for the front door, I realized I was actually curious to see what Ambrose had come up with. After knocking a few times with no response, I heard voices from the backyard and headed that way.
They're supposed to be in the trees! Someone wailed just as I came up to the gate. You don't put lights on bushes!
Says who? Another voice, sounding equally frustrated, replied.
Everyone! God, Roger, just stop! That looks awful! Give them to me!
I leaned over the gate carefully, looking into the yard. Across the bright green grass, Maya and her groom were standing by a holly bush with a few lights flung across it, the rest in a tangle at their feet. Even though they were facing away from me, the tension was clear. Her arms were crossed, his on his hips.
Hello? I called out. I was told to bring tables.
Maya turned, seeing me.
Oh, Luna, hi. Honey, go help her. I'll get some backup.
As she ran, barefoot, across the grass and up the back porch steps to the house, Roger made his way over to me. He was about my height, skinny, with black curly hair, wearing a t-shirt that said, "I dig fossils." Pit stains were visible beneath both his arms. "Do we need tables?" he said to me in lieu of a hello. "I was thinking everyone could just sit on blankets."
"Just doing as I was asked," I said cheerfully, starting back to my car.
His response to this was an audible grumbling. Maybe Ambrose had called this right and he was a CG after all.
"Up until last night, we were getting married at a coffee shop."
"I heard that," I said, surprised and yet not at how swiftly I'd shifted into my ever-pleasant I'm-staying-out-of-this work mode. "I brought six. That's all we had."
"Six?" he said.
"How many people are they inviting now?"
Instead of replying, I popped the back of my Suburban, sliding the top table out so he could grab one end of it. He didn't, instead now focused on his phone. I looked back into the car, realizing I was probably going to have to ask him to help me, when suddenly I felt hands grab the other end.
"Got it," Ambrose said, sliding it farther out. "Yo, Roger, you and Maya take this. We'll get the next one."
"Sure thing," I heard Maya say cheerfully.
Nothing from Roger. A moment later, they were walking awkwardly, the table between them, up the path to the side gate. I pulled the next table out, Ambrose took the end, and we put it between us, following them.
"So how's it going?" I asked. I sensed some light tension.
"Oh, no, there's heavy tension,"
he replied, shaking that curl out of his face. The door of the house opened and Bea and Lauren came out, making their way down the walk.
"In the truck there, ladies. We've got four more to carry around."
"I meant tension about the lights," I corrected him, dodging a rose bush as it came up on my left.
"Oh, there's that too."
He glanced behind him, adjusting his trajectory toward the gate.
"Turns out you really kind of need a ladder if you want them in the trees."
"You don't have a ladder?"
"My plan was to hurl them," he explained.
A word I had never, in all my years, used while discussing wedding prep.
"Somebody on this block has to have one. You just need to go and ask."
"How can I do that, though?"
he replied, shifting his grip on the table.
"When every time we add any tiny wrinkle, Roger sighs loudly and Maya starts crying."
"Why are they even here?" I asked. "You know my mom never allows the bride or groom at the event pre-ceremony, even if they want to be. It's asking for trouble."
"I don't have that many people,"
he shot back. I raised my eyebrows.
"Sorry, it's just, this isn't as easy as I thought it would be. Like, it's not easy. At all. Shoot, I just banged my leg on this fence. Watch it as you come through, okay?"
"Ambrose!" Maya yelled from behind him. "Where do you want these?"
"Arranged in an orderly and yet not rigid fashion,"
he replied.
"What?"
In return, he grimaced. I'd honestly never seen him so stressed, and had to fight the urge to laugh, which was absolutely the wrong response, I knew.
"Just put it down," he said, his voice tight. "I'll figure it out." "I don't understand why we need tables,"
Roger was saying as we put ours next to the one they'd dropped unceremoniously by a large tree.
"What happened to my blanket idea?" "You can't expect people to sit on the ground and balance a plate in their lap at a wedding," Ambrose told him. "Why not? Not everyone needs a chair."
I was facing Ambrose, so I saw his expression, one of sudden realization, then dread, as he heard this last word. I said carefully, "You do have chairs, right?" He just looked at me as Lauren yelped,
"Ouch! I just totally whacked my leg! You guys, hazard over here by the gate!"
"Ambrose, where do you want this table?"
Bea asked.
"He said in an orderly but not rigid fashion," Maya told her.
"What the hell does that mean?"
Before Ambrose could respond, a huge clump of lights fell from the tree above us, landing with a clank on the grass. So the hurling had worked. Sort of.
Jesus, Roger said. That could have killed someone.
Maya sniffled, putting her hand to her mouth as Bea and Lauren exchanged looks. But I was focused only on Ambrose, looking around the backyard with obvious rising panic on his face. Go find a ladder, I told him. I've got this. Chapter 23. My mother always said that a good wedding is 80% organization, 15% guest behavior, and 5% luck. But really, no matter the size or type, you took all the luck you could get. So far, we'd had some, like the fact that Bee's neighbor two doors down was a contractor who had several ladders, one of which he happily climbed, lights in hand, then draped them across the branches as I directed him. He also had 6 folding chairs in his garage, which we were able to add to the 5 that Bea found wrapped in spiderwebs behind her water heater, where they'd been left by the previous owner of the house. We still needed more, though, which was why it was especially fortunate the bakers kept an ample supply in their own garage to set up, along with small tables, for impromptu food truck seating. One call to Jilly. Sure enough, Kitty had an ear infection, and she'd offered to bring as many as we needed of each. When I told Ambrose, he exhaled such a big breath I thought he might collapse outright.
Thank God, he said. If I had to hear Roger talking about blankets one more time, I would have lost my mind.
She and Michael Salem are going to try to bring them by 5 at the latest. Ceremony is at 6, right?
That's the plan,
he said, unpacking another mason jar from the box at his feet.
It should be super fast. Then we'll immediately start receptioning.
Not exactly a word, I pointed out, lending a hand with the jars. What about food? Are you doing it right away or waiting?
It's all finger stuff that has to be heated, he said. So I figured we'd do it in waves. That's why I put that one table down at the bottom of the stairs. We can run out the trays, plop them down, and let everyone have at them.
Plop, like hurl, was a word I hadn't heard much before in terms of planning. You may get a mob scene, though, especially if people are hungry. Might be better to pass some so they can't all rush one spot.
Oh. He stopped unpacking. I didn't think about that. We don't have servers, though.
I can help with that, I told him, picking out another jar. And I'm sure we can enlist a couple of others. There's a certain kind of wedding guest that likes a job. You just have to ID them. This, of course, was different from someone trying to wrest control of the event. There were types who just thrived on managing a guest book or collecting bouquets from bridesmaids for the cake table, and William was great at spotting them within minutes of arrival. Without him there, I'd just have to trust my own instincts.
Oh, I don't want you to have to stick around,
Ambrose said now as we finally emptied the box. 12 jars for 6 tables. 18 would be better, but it would do.
I'm sure you have plans tonight.
Instantly, I felt embarrassed. Here I was inviting myself to the very wedding I'd been adamant only the day before I wanted no part of. Stupid, I thought, and wished for a second I'd ignored his text and just stayed home, maybe tried again to deal with that dress. Then, though, I looked in the wide window in front of us and saw Maya at the kitchen island, bent over the crowns she and Lauren were weaving from flowers picked in Bee's garden. She was smiling as she said something, then covered her mouth and laughed. Not until later tonight, I told him. I mean, I don't want to force myself on you, but if you need my help, you have it. Ambrose looked up at me.
I think it's obvious that need is not even strong enough a word. Please stay.
Now I smiled. Okay, now let's talk tablecloths. It was a short conversation, as this detail, like many others, had been overlooked.
Oh, shit, Lauren said when we went inside to report this.
With the whole blanket debate, those totally slipped my mind.
You don't absolutely need them, I pointed out. It's just the tables are kind of banged up.
So we need 6 tablecloths, Ambrose said, looking around the kitchen as if they might suddenly materialize. That would be luck. And probably some plates.
Probably? I asked.
We have lots of napkins, he told me. It's finger food.
People will get a new napkin for every item they eat?
Asked Roger, who, unlike the tablecloths, had suddenly appeared.
That's so bad for the earth.
Roger, it's a napkin, not fracking, Lauren told him, sounding more peeved than I thought was possible for her.
It's still wasteful.
What we should do is give everyone 1 plate and 1 cup when they arrive, and they keep it until the end.
What? Maya said.
Oh, shit. Ambrose sighed. Cups.
We don't have cups? Lauren asked.
I'm not asking people to carry around their plate for 3 hours, Maya said, her voice more adamant than I'd heard it all day.
3 hours, Roger said. How long are we planning to do this?
I can't believe you forgot cups, Lauren said to Ambrose. I'm in charge of everything, he shot back. You can't keep up with paper goods?
I was dealing with flowers, she said.
Uh-oh, I thought. Nothing could fray nerves like this kind of detail, and my instinct told me words might be about to be spoken that would not be able to be taken back.
You ordered a keg, yes?
I asked Ambrose. He nodded.
Then they'll bring cups with it. As far as plates, there's a dollar store 2 blocks away where they also have paper tablecloths. They're cheap and will rip eventually, but at least they'll look nice when people arrive.
Dollar store, Ambrose repeated. Right, let's go.
Go? Lauren said. You're supposed to be helping with the bouquets. You promised like an hour ago.
Did you not hear me say I'm kind of busy dealing with all the other details? He said.
In return, she glared at him. That got ugly fast, I thought. A knock sounded on the glass door in front of us. When I looked up, Leo was standing there, in black pants and white shirt, carrying a guitar case and an amp.
Where do I plug in?
He called out, his voice muffled.
Plug in? Roger said. We're going electric with this?
I thought he was just doing his DJ thing on his computer, Lauren whispered to Maya. I didn't even know he played.
You're his best friend, Ambrose pointed out.
Oh, shut up, she said.
Then, turning on her heel, she stomped off. Maya looked at me like I was supposed to do something before following her.
Ambrose! Bea called from down the hallway. Steve and Emily just got here with the food. Did you mean to have them buy 40 pizzas?
40? Roger said. I didn't even know we were having pizza. Now we definitely need to do my assigned plate idea. They're going to be bite-sized!
Ambrose shouted, sounding slightly hysterical. Everyone got quiet quickly. Until Leo, still outside, knocked again, harder this time.
I'll just go to the dollar store, I said quietly to Ambrose, happy for any reason to put distance between me and Leo. See you in a bit.
Everyone started talking again as I slipped out, pulling my keys from my pocket. I exhaled, relieved, when the front screen door swung shut behind me. I'd just cranked the engine and put my car into gear when I heard a knocking on the back window. As I turned to look, the passenger door rattled open and Ambrose jumped in.
Drive. Fast. Get us out of here,
he said, yanking it shut behind him.
But, Luna, I'm begging you, just go.
I remembered the last time he'd leapt into that seat unexpectedly and told me to floor it. Then we'd stolen a dog. This time, who knew? Whatever happened, though, it was better than that lonely, dusty closet I'd been in earlier, or maybe forever.
You gotta live,
I heard Ethan say,
something I'd almost forgotten. So I drove.
Man, Ambrose said, as we stood in the paper goods aisle at $1. This place is amazing.
I looked at the display of napkins before me, then at him. It's a dollar store. Surely you've seen one before.
Nope,
he said, crouching down in front of the tablecloths and rifling through them.
My mom's not much for discounts.
After her wedding and the ongoing prep for Bee's upcoming one, I actually believed this. Just then, I heard a familiar buzz, his phone. He pulled it out, glancing at it, then put it back in his pocket. Hopefully not another crisis, I said, checking out a stack of hand towels bound with a crooked ribbon.
No, just Lauren.
His voice was flat. Of course I noticed. So, I said slowly, everything okay with you guys? Seemed pretty tense back there. He sighed, sitting back on his heels.
She's just wound tightly with all this, wanting Maya to be happy and all that.
What about you guys, though? I asked. You're still happy, right?
I guess, he replied.
Not exactly a ringing endorsement.
It's harder, you know, going long-term. Or maybe it's just hard with her.
Relationships take work, I pointed out.
Yeah, but the question is, how much? And how soon?
He glanced at me.
I think you might win this bet after all, is what I'm saying.
I had to admit, this was a surprise. Suddenly, things looked different. I had to think before I answered. I'd rather you be happy, I told him.
Yeah?
He asked. I nodded. Then he said, slowly,
Well, that's good to know.
We just stood there, looking at each other, and suddenly I felt it. It wasn't a beach at night, the perfect moment, or an ideal beginning, far from it. But something was happening just like that moment I leaned into him, our hands cutting the cake. I just didn't know what it was. Or maybe I did. So, I said quickly, tablecloths, plates, forks, you said you have napkins?
Napkins, he repeated. Right. Only about 40.
Big ones?
Very small, like cocktail size.
I sighed, then reached out, collecting 7 packs of 20 large ones and tossing them in the basket I was holding.
Do we need that many, really? Only 30 people are coming.
People are messy and like multiple napkins and they're a buck each, Roger, I said.
Hey,
he said, holding up his hand. I would never ask you to carry the same plate around for 3 hours.
Thank goodness, I replied.
If you did, we'd no longer be friends for sure. I moved down the aisle, checking out some white crepe paper rolls that were on special for a quarter each. A year or so ago, we'd done some table decor with tulle that could probably be recreated, and it was better than just plain cloths.
So you're saying we're friends?
I turned back to him. Aren't we?
Well, I was in from the start, he replied. But you're a harder nut to crack.
Now I'm a nut?
I'm just saying. I'm glad to hear it, that's all.
He smiled.
You know, you're not the easiest person to win over.
I didn't realize you were trying to, I replied, trying to make a joke.
From the start,
he repeated, not kidding at all. And just like that, it was back between us, whatever it was, rising up again. I could see it in the seriousness of his face, hear it in the quiet of his voice, the inhale he'd just taken, as if he was about to speak. I realized I was scared of what might happen next, that whatever words he chose to say next would be too much for me, but at the same time I was desperate to hear them. What a weird push and pull in this world at that moment. And yet, I would have stayed there, on the edge, forever.
But then his phone rang, loud, between us, and he didn't say anything, at least to me.
Hello?
He answered, then listened a second.
Non-alcoholic beer? No, that is not.